You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Gather round, loyal listeners. It's the Brooking Report on Radio 1 91 FM.
It is indeed the Brooking Report with Dunedin's Rachel Brooking. Good morning to you, Rachel. How are we doing?
Oh, it's a beautiful autumn day. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Nice. You're staying cool because you're staying warm because it feels very, very cold outside.
It is very cold outside, and I just wandered down from my office and I have a lot of New Zealand made wool on at the moment.
Nice. Have you been to Static Age on George Street before?
I don't think I have.
Great vintage store. They have tons of really awesome vintage knitwear from New Zealand. Like the 70s, 80s. This is...
Is that what you're wearing?
This isn't wool, but it is acrylic, and it is from the 70s, and it is from New Zealand. So.
And people listening can't see us, but it is a fake cardigan.
a fardigan, if you will.
Attached by visual aids to a turtleneck.
Yeah, I feel like it's sort of Soprano-esque.
Oh, it's great.
And that's sort of my vibe. Thank you very much. Of course, it is the 1st of May, which is Te Marama Puro Aotearoa, New Zealand Music Month, which is a pretty significant thing for us here in the alternative radio biz. What are your favourite New Zealand music releases from the past few years? Anything, any highlights you want to share?
Past few years.
Yeah, any time period really at all, but like last decade.
If we could go back a couple of decades. I'm very bad at listening to my music, but I have enjoyed listening to Ma, who brings together lots of things that I'm interested in, including pest control, which is not what you expect in a songwriter, necessarily. I really enjoyed... I've just totally blanked the band that we just talked about.
Dopra
is a great band, probably not the past decade, but I loved going to Dopra out at Port Chalmers, and then last year going to
Supergroove. There you go.
I've only had one coffee this morning and I'm forgetting all the band names.
One coffee.
Isn't that terrible?
And it's 9:30.
I know.
A travesty.
I'm due another one. But that was super fun, super groove with Shafu and King Capizzi and...
Troy Kingy, maybe?
Was Troy Kingy
there? I don't know. I feel like maybe
Troy
I saw his name on his tour.
Maybe. Anyway, like Troy Kingy as well. Don't listen to enough new music, though. That's something that I... on my list of do better. Rachel.
This is the month of music listening for New Zealand stuff, so you're in the right place, the right time.
I am.
Before we do get into some serious questions, you mentioned that this is your first coffee of the morning. Well, you've only had one coffee. What parliamentarian has the worst caffeine addiction that you know of? Can you out anyone as being a caffeine addict?
I'm not sure that I can because it's so common.
Yeah.
Such a common addiction amongst us.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Wood said he was working 80 to 90 hours a week in cabinet, so I assume you need a lot of caffeine to get through that.
Well, I certainly need a lot of caffeine, although try not to go above three a day. There's a lot of, the Chris's. The Christopher and the Chris, they drink a lot of caffeine, but not in coffee form. So the Prime Minister is a Pepsi Max fan.
Really?
And leader of the Labour Party is a Coke Zero fan.
Wow.
So they've always got caffeine around them, those two.
And that's hilarious because Pepsi's blue and Coke is red.
Ha!
That's double entendre.
There we go.
Oh my goodness.
I, of course, much prefer Karma Cola if I'm going to be having a cola drink. They're delicious. Mm-hmm. Phoenix does a really good one too. Mm-hmm. Had one of those up in Brockville last week when I was doing a clinic.
Nice.
That had been donated. Thank you for that. So the cafe at Parliament's open till 8 p.m. and they keep the coffee machine on for a long, long time. But, you know, coffee's
a staple, unfortunately,
that's
in our modern life. Let's talk Turkey. In Parliament recently, you highlighted how this government is disestablishing the Ministry for the Environment and that there's $1 billion less in projected spending on conservation. This, coupled with the Minister of Conservation saying we can't afford to save all of our native species, is pretty troubling. Is it fair to say that this government doesn't really care about nature all that much?
I think it's even worse than that. They're actively decrying nature. So you have that Minister for Conservation saying, oh, we should do a cost-benefit analysis of what it's worth to stop a species going extinct. you know, that we shouldn't just not want species to go extinct. And you have another minister from a different party demonising various different species. So Freddie the Frog, goodbye Freddie, he says, and talking about it in that dismissive language is just, it's not on. It's terrible. Plus, all that they've done in terms of the resource management sense has allowed more pollution into our waterways, and they've been cutting all this money from things that were spent on nature. So whether that's through the Department of Conservation or Jobs for Nature or just cuts generally to any environmental program from community hubs, for instance, doing great work, not just for the environment, but also for community building. And all of that funding's been cut. So have the funding that was available to take legal action for the environment, that's all been cut as well. Cut.
I think the number you mentioned in Parliament was 278 jobs from the Ministry of the Environment, which is just nuts.
Yeah, and absolutely so they're going to go into a mega industry with a whole lot of departments that are focused on more on urban issues, so transport and housing. And I did ask the Minister for RM Reform last week if he could commit to all of those departments doing better for the environment, and he sort of said yes. Yes. But then he had a bit of a caveat. So it's unlikely that that will be what happens, and what in fact will happen is that the environment's voice will be diluted in a ministry that's very focused on urban and various areas. And of course the work of the Ministry for the Environment is much more than urban planning, although that's really important too, and it goes to the monitoring and some enforcement and setting those rules and expectations around what happens to our waterways, our biodiversity on private land, and our air pollution, as well as our coastal environment.
Well, it seems like the nature we're talking about is being sacrificed at the altar of industry. And recently, the US and New Zealand signed a deal for potential seabed mining. Have you seen that in the news?
Around the critical minerals?
Because the US is mainly getting the critical minerals from China, and they're establishing a deal with New Zealand, which some commentators think could lead to seabed mining. Is that, like, prohibited in our law, or is there a pretty open channel to establish that?
Unfortunately, there's an open channel, and we've seen that particularly through the fast-track legislation. So seabed mining is obviously in a coastal environment, and to do that you have to go through... the Environmental Protection Authority has the laws that relate to those permissions. And there was one off the coast of Taranaki that applied and got rejected and rejected and rejected. And then under the fast track, the new legislation of this government that doesn't do as well as protecting the environment as normal legislation, it got into the fast track, but it was declined again. So pretty much the same application that had already been declined time and time again. They had another shot at it, got declined. So hopefully that one is off the table for now, but it is possible to mine for seabed, to mine the seabed at the moment, which is a problem. And then the minister as well for resources, so that's Shane Jones, who doesn't like frogs, he's also has some critical minerals policies that he's got, where he includes coal, which is not a mineral. It's a rock. And gold as well. And gold is not, you know, people say the whole idea of these critical minerals is like, well, if we want to build our fancy solar panels and have electric
the green
cars
revolution.
And we've got our cell phones and everything else, then there are particular elements or minerals that we need to make those things.
Cobalt, and, you know.
And, you know, that's a fair argument to be having to try and work out what they are and where they are. But then they've just got really greedy with it and adding in all these things that have nothing to do with that argument. You can make a case that, oh, well, we need these fossil fuels because we haven't yet electrified and we therefore need them as a form of energy. But that's a totally different reason than saying, well, we need these very particular elements and minerals to make these very particular things that are going to get us off fossil fuels and do better for the climate.
They're just using it as an excuse to do more mining.
Yeah.
And more extraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cynical.
Yeah, super, super cynical. I want to move and start talking about some of the PR issues the Prime Minister has been having recently. He announced that he'll no longer be doing a weekly interview on TVNZ Breakfast after some hard basket interviews with Tova O'Brien. Political comms academic Dr. Claire Robertson told RNZ that it risks alienating an audience who are relatively centrist, not super tribal, and it also risks adding to the opaqueness of this government. Do you think that there's sort of a hypocrisy there between National rejecting this interview slot when Jacinda Ardern rejected Mike Hosking's NZ Talkback show? Yeah, she was decried as a chicken, but they're saying it's, you know, oh, he's just too busy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you choose to not go on one of the national broadcasters.
Yeah, the public broadcaster as well.
Absolutely. And, of course, that was Jacinda's choice to not go on to Hosking's, which is the NZ Me.
But she went on there 47 times. 47 times.
Yeah, she went on there a lot. And then when Chris Hipkins became the Prime Minister, he went back on there as well. So, yeah, it just seems to me a baffling thing to do in an election year when you want all the coverage that you can get to explain to the public, you know, what it is that you're doing or not doing, what your choices are, to not go on one. And... And Tova is, I mean, she's a good interviewer, right? And she makes stories, and she's done it to everybody of all political stripes.
Yeah, she's challenging, and she's also fair and balanced, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if she sniffs a story, doesn't matter who the story's about, she's on the case.
She's chasing it up, yeah, totally. It's just unfortunate that it's adding to this, you know, level of uncommunicability, this level of opaqueness. It's not very transparent.
No, it's not transparent. And look, Darren, I mean, this, even since yesterday, things have changed with what's happened between the email exchange between Winston Peters as the foreign minister and Christopher Luxon as the prime minister on Iran.
Yeah.
And them firing shots at each other. You know, it was a total chaos in there, in this government, that not only is it chaotic in terms of how they govern, it's how they talk to all New Zealanders, but also how they treat us. So whether that's the environment that we were just talking about, or if it's workers' rights, you know, it's the 1st of May today, that's an important day in terms of workers' rights, May Day. Or if it's how they're treating, you know, our frontline services as well. So whatever lens you look at it, they're doing a terrible job. We need to change them.
Completely, unless you're a landlord, and then in which case it's awesome. I know Foreign Affairs is...
Or a tobacco company.
Or a tobacco company, totally. Or a mining company. All the good people. You mentioned that letter, those emails between Luxon and Winston Peters, which shows that Luxon wanted to be more publicly pro-US and Israel with regards to the war in Iran. You know, how bad is it that our Prime Minister can't condemn what the US is doing over there when they are committing lots of war crimes? It's outrageous that they give any leeway to those two countries when they're deliberately targeting citizens. Does it make New Zealand look pathetic on the global stage?
It doesn't make us look good, does it? And the thing is, New Zealand has always been, or for a long time, and it's been bipartisan, it's been through National and Labour governments, has had this reputation of standing up for international law, whatever's happening. So we saw with Helen Clark, we didn't go into Iraq. We've got you know, lots and lots of examples of New Zealand standing up for the international law. And in this case, that would be, you know, saying that you do not bomb schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very easy thing to say.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done that. And he wanted to go even further away from that statement. And of course, Iran's, it was terrible. What they do to their citizens is absolutely terrible. And I've had a number of Iranians come and meet me actually before all of this kicked off, just saying how diabolical the regime is in Iran. And we shouldn't forget that. But you can say the two things at once.
Yeah.
That regime does some terrible things to its citizens with executions and the like. And we should follow international law to deal with it.
Mm-hmm, completely. And it's not as though bombing them will actually solve anything. I think if we learn lessons from Iraq, Libya, that's not, you know, regime change when led from a country that everyone hates, like the US. A lot of people don't like them. You know, it doesn't produce great results.
That's right. These are there's a whole lot of history, and I am no expert in this whatsoever, but it does seem to be that you need to be on the ground to make big changes. And these are air attacks, and they are killing civilians, and that's terrible.
Yep, completely. I want to move on from that, and oh my goodness! For some reason, my questions weren't loading. No, I've got one question in front of me now. I don't know if you saw, but there was a really excellent spin-off piece authored by Hayden Donnell. He pointed out that at the moment there's only 5 policies listed on the Labour Party website. It's part of an op-ed that's all about, you know, where is Labour? Because there hasn't been a lot of policy talk from you guys. How are these 5 policies going to persuade voters who only see Labour as a slightly nicer national? Do you have, you know, that people that don't see that your party has a super strong vision for the future? Are we going to see a lot more policy in the near future?
Certainly after the budget, there'll be more policies. So the budget comes right at the end of May, and we'll be going into urgency right at that last sort of weekend of May.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a lot of policy that you might be talking about. So has a financial implication. So more money has, if we say, for instance, if we said, and this isn't one of the policies, but it's been one in the past, if we said we're going to do Jobs for Nature again, that might have a $1 billion price tag on it. So is there $1 billion in the government's funds that we can spend on that policy?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that link between how much money there is and what policies you can say. Not all policies are like that. Some policies don't have a big fiscal implication in that way. But there are a whole lot that do have a big fiscal implication. So that is waiting for the books to be opened at the end of May. However, going back, we have our track record and we have our Labour Party values. We have our constitution, we have policy platforms as well in that. Plus we have announced some really big policies already.
Mm.
So one of those is a capital gains tax. It's not on the family home, and it is a basic capital gains tax. And what that is aiming to do is deal with the problem that we have in our property market that encourages the landlords that you were just talking about to buy up properties, which means it's difficult for first home owners to get in there and buy their own house. And we really think that everybody should have secure, warm, dry housing. So a capital gains tax to help fix that problem, that structural problem that we have in our property market, but then to ring fence any revenue that is gained from that tax
for free GP visits.
So for health, yeah. And out of that, one of the things in that health system change would be the 3 free GP visits. Mm. Very hard to say fast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole lot of other policies that go with that in terms of loan schemes for GPs so they can set up on their own. That's become a problem. Obviously, there are workforce issues there as well, and how you triage and how you fund GPs as well. All of that there. Then there's the future fund policy as well, which is really trying to focus on saying, no, these really important assets in New Zealand that need to stay in New Zealand ownership, and we need to grow them and grow New Zealanders investing, New Zealand investing in New Zealand as an important thing.
So like future made in Australia, made in New Zealand. that's what I call it. I like it. But those are good policies, but they might not be the transformational policies people want to see from a Labour government. I mean, in the 40s, you guys made the welfare state. Some people have called it Ming Vase politics. Have you heard that term before?
Well, you've raised it with me before, but it's not one that I'm hugely familiar with.
Oh, true. Okay. Well, there were some commentators who described Keir Starmer's incremental policies like carrying a big Ming Vase across a very long room and not wanting to drop it. You know, it's very, very slow. It's very incremental to the point where it might be seen as redundant.
Well, look, we did lots of things when we were in government, and it's one of those interesting things people say, oh, you had the majority and you didn't change the world. Yet, when the National Government came in, they repealed fair pay agreements, they repealed our legislation on spatial planning, they repealed our legislation on replacing the Resource Management Act. They've changed the pay equity legislation. You know, they've done so many things to undo what we were doing. The Māori Health Authority is another good example. School lunches, giving them to some big corporate, international corporate, rather than being locally made. That's another policy that we have, that we will bring back those locally made school lunches. You know, so they spent a whole lot of time undoing lots of things that Labor had done. And a thing that I'm really proud about is the SERF. So we had the Climate Emergency Response Fund, when the ETS, which is the Emissions Trading Scheme, that was working better than it is now. And the money generated from that scheme was getting put back into climate pollution reduction things. And there was a GIDI fund as well. So a couple of weeks ago, I flicked the switch, metaphorical switch, on an electric boiler at Spates. And so that was going from using natural gas, or fossil fuel, now using electricity. And part of the funding for that, most of the funding came from Spates itself, from Lion, but part of that funding came from this GIDI fund, which is one of the things that we've done in government that I'm really proud of. So we did all these things. It's just this government has chosen to really swing the other way and undo all of it. And it's not things that they campaigned on. They did campaign on Three Waters, another thing that they changed that, you know, would have dealt with a lot of these long-term issues that New Zealand has with infrastructure. So we don't want to do what they've done and totally swing crazily and cause a whole lot more uncertainty, but we do want to fix all the terrible things that they've done.
Must be a balancing act. But we'll get into more of that next time you come on the program. Thanks for joining me as always. We're going to play.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.